Hi, I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm H. Claire Taylor. Have you struggled to keep up with the fast-changing world of self-publishing?
Do you want to learn the latest news, tips, and tactics to help you sell more books now and into the future?
Welcome to the Sell More Books Show, a weekly podcast that gives you all the info you need to know in under an hour.
To save you time, give you motivation, and boost your publishing profit.
Enough waffling. Let's get started.
Okay, Claire, on with the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Books Show, episode 341. We've got a good one for you today, and hopefully they're all good. I'm Brian Cohen from the 5-Day Amazon Ad Profit Challenge, joined by H. Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, we had someone post on my Facebook wall asking, does FFS stand for what I think it means? And you said it did. So
yes, it does. Don't let my sweet exterior fool you.
Never. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm just in sort of a creative zone lately. I went back into it. I was not in a creative zone, and now I'm in a creative zone again. So I'm riding the wave.
That's a good feeling.
How about you, birthday boy?
Well, thank you. Yes. While we're recording this, it's my birthday. When this comes live, it'll be the day after my birthday.
You'll all have missed it. Whoops.
You'll all have missed it and feel bad. It's great. It's kind of fun. I was just posting in the challenge group, which started on Monday. I've decided this time I'm going to pull a Cougar Town. And at the beginning of each day, I'm going to post a new cover photo to the group with another quip like they did at the beginning of the show in the show Cougar Town. And I posted today, no new video today, but it is Brian's birthday. He wants a pony and got 60 plus gifts of ponies. Mm-hmm. So I didn't realize that people were that ready, willing, and able to provide ponies.
Birthday gifts are the new birthday gifts, they say.
All I want are gifts. All I want are birthday gifts. I used to say, I want experiences, not things. But right now, experiences don't work. So
you want to experience the same little image repeating over and over again. That's what you want to experience.
That is what I want to experience. But yeah, so right now going on is the 5-day challenge, which you can still start at sellingforauthors.com/October. We have 8,600 people registered. It is a small number. I'm very disappointed. No, it's a lot of people and it's a ton of fun. And it's always great seeing like that wave of people who are like, I never created an ad and now I created an ad. That's why apparently there's people in the community that hate me that are like, turn off your ads. Brian's challenge is coming up. But I just love helping a lot of people to learn how to do it for the first time. And it's very gratifying. I truly enjoy the process.
So. I mean, it sounds like a lot of people are enjoying it because those are a lot of repeat people too, right?
Yes, we do have some people come back in. I mean, with ads and spending money on marketing, you get people saying like, oh, this is my second time. Now I'm starting to get it. And sometimes repetition is the best way for it to truly sink it.
Well, and it's like NaNoWriMo. It's that group experience, knowing that everyone's doing it at once.
I remember my first NaNoWriMo back in 2011 or so, and it was a blast. I don't think I finished my novel about a import to Chicago doing improv classes. It's not self-referential at all.
You have to kind of get that out of your system before you can write other books.
I never published it. And so that was the 90,000 word behemoth that never quite ended up seeing the light of day. But yeah, absolutely.
I have a few nanos like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never doing anything with this. No one ever needs to read this.
Nano, no PubMo. What about you, Claire? So you're in the creative zone. Anything anybody should hear about, know about?
Not author related. No, I'm writing two different series right now, kind of spending my mornings doing one, afternoons doing the other, and then waiting on another one to come back. So I'm just I've got a lot of irons in the fire, but haven't, you know, I mean, courses are still there. I'm still available for story alignments. You might need to book me a little bit in advance, but it's there. So yeah, I'm just awesome. Focusing. I know I'm like, I need to be marketing stuff. I don't want to market right now. I want to create.
Well, I'll tell you from experience, running Facebook ads over the last 2 months have been expensive. So
yeah. Well, I mean, I have my ads going in the background. Yeah, I market my stuff. It's not like I'm not advertising or anything, but it's like set it and forget it. And then a month later, go back and go, whoops, I probably could have made that more effective.
And thus is the author journey. So we have a winner today for, we're kind of playing around with our prizes here. I've got a copy of How to Write a Sizzling Synopsis that I would love to send out to our winner this week, Pockets McGee. So Pockets, drop me an email at brian@sellingforauthors.com saying, I won! And I'll send you a copy of Sizzling Synopsis. And we'll, yeah.
I do want to do an update because last week, Pockets McGee referenced a freaky magician. And I was like, that seems redundant. And then he went the extra mile and sent me a video of the freaky magician. And I want to confirm that it was a freaky magician.
Wow.
So thank you to Pockets McGee for brightening my day.
Pockets McGee, always willing to go the extra mile. As are we for our featured patrons. Number one, we have The Life of Magdalene Slatewood by Mildred Stallworth. Magdalene's life was not always peaches and cream. Born into a big family where her parents were married but actually lived in two separate homes. Both were determined to make sure their kids were not subject to neglect in any way, required both of them to become one at heart and stay true to their vows, but to operate separately, working for the common goal that both families would still become one. Very interesting. That's The Life of Magdalene Slatewood.
And then we have R.A. Patterson's How to Write Manga. What if you could wake up tomorrow and make manga? What would you create? The difference between you and a manga pro is smaller than you think. Do you want to create manga? Do you want to share your story worlds with everyone? If so, you should check out How to Write Manga by R.A. Patterson.
I want to make a manga of this show.
I think, yes, I absolutely think that's where we should invest our time.
The difference between me and a manga pro is smaller than you'd think. So The Reluctant Detective by Tom Fowler is our third. It's CT's first case. He wants an easy one. Instead, he gets Alice. CT Ferguson spent years as a hacker living in Hong Kong, working against the Chinese government. Then they found him, threw him in jail, and eventually kicked him out. In Baltimore, CT sets himself up as a private investigator. Then Alice walks in. So you can pick up The Reluctant Detective or any of the books from our patrons. If you would like to become a patron, patreon.com/SMBS. Question of the week last week. If you were to win any category for your book in an indie publishing awards ceremony, what would you want that category to be other than best self-publishing podcast manga?
Yeah, that one has already basically been clinched.
Already been clinched. Claire, first one is to you.
All right. So Connie Bidal said, I'd love to win best LGBTQ plus cozy mystery. Really, I'd love to even see more LGBTQ plus cozy mysteries out there. There are a handful of us, virtually all indie, serving a need for representation.
Yeah, agreed. Awesome. Roland said, I want to win most effective health and wellness book. Because Roland has already won most handsome news collector.
Yep.
Number three to you.
We've got Sarah Proud Blackard, who said, I'd like to win an inspirational romantic suspense. Very nice. I love these sub genres. Everyone knows where they're working with and where they're at in these drilling down in these lists.
I know. It's great. I think the new like cross genre, seven different genres is just the extremely drilled down to the core of the earth genre.
Yeah. Earth core.
Earth core. Yeah. That's some hard core. Okay, let's get into the tips.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Tip number one, plays well with others. As an author, it pays to be social online, says author Frances Caballo on her site, Social Media Just for Writers. Caballo has five basic rules for social media for authors. One, be a social butterfly in the best sense possible. Social media was never designed to be a broadcast messaging system the way radio and television are. Conversations are the backbone of social media. Just being there isn't enough. Two, it's not about you, at least not all the time. Engaging with and helping others will get you farther than constantly posting about yourself. Three, play nicely, which should be self-explanatory. Four, ignore some people rather than get into online battles. Simply do not engage. Five, finally, don't start posting on social media just to have a presence. You need to build a platform, and that requires some thinking ahead. Identify your reading demo. Select the social media networks to reach them. Claire, I know that you're not as big into like being on social media every 5 seconds as maybe I am. What do you think about these five rules?
I think they're good ones. I definitely think that you can use social media to your benefit if you like it. Yeah, don't be mean, engage with other people. It is social, right? So you want to use good social skills. I think that's kind of what these boiled down to, right? If you go to a conference in person and you just only talk about yourself, you don't ask anyone anything about them, or, you know, maybe you know some people and you don't bother to introduce them to other people, that's just bad etiquette. So yeah, I think this is all smart stuff. This is basic social skills, reciprocation, and professionalism, really.
I've always liked the Gary Vaynerchuk tip of just if you're constantly just trying to get new people and not paying attention to the people you have already, then it's kind of like, well, he kind of refers to it as giving the middle finger to the people who are already on your list or on your group. And I think that that's true to a certain extent. Like, it can't always be about growth. It has to be about taking care of the people who've made the effort to connect with you. And I sometimes feel like I fall down on the job, but if I don't comment on every single person's post or comment, I mean, I think there were like something like 8,000 comments on my group the other day. So I'm certainly not going to be able to get to all of them, but at least trying to like or love all of those so that people see that you're actually seeing them and making the effort. It makes a difference.
Definitely. I think if you're building a community-based, you know, platform and like online, you know, presence, and that's who you want your persona to be, then social media is great for that. I don't think that everyone needs to be socially focused in their persona, though. I think some people are just fine reading an author's work and actually prefer for them to feel like that author is untouchable and unreachable. So that's just a little theory of mine, but
you got to write that book, Pedestal Publishing.
I mean, because then it's, you know, like if your favorite author who you think is untouchable suddenly tweets or like retweets your stuff, you're like, oh my gosh, now I have to go buy all the newest editions of their work.
Pedestal Publishing, how to never connect with your reader.
God, that's the dream.
Why don't you take on tip two?
All right. Books are just the beginning. Today's author can sell more than just books. When it comes to true fans, premium products can expand an author's income and build good relationships with readers. A well-selected premium product can more than double the profit in your author business, says Joanna Penn and Orna Ross on the Ask Ally podcast. But what premium products work for authors? Drawing on Ally's business plan for authors, Penn and Ross suggest 10 premium products for authors of fiction, nonfiction, and poetry, from the obvious to the unusual, starting with premium print edition books, such as limited edition hardbacks. Workbooks, journals, notebooks, and other print-on-demand products can also work, particularly for nonfiction authors, as can online courses and membership, premium newsletters and audio subscriptions, and coaching, consulting, and mentoring. While nonfiction is more straightforward, they say many novelists are successfully doing workshops, paid performances, and creating merchandise that ties in with their books.
I want to see some of that merch for the Shifter series, the paranormal cop series.
Shift, yeah, the Killhaven Police.
Mm-hmm. I want to see it. I want to see it emblazoned on some jackets, some shift work jackets.
Yeah. Eden's Fist gang jackets. That's my human supremacist group, Eden's Fist.
I love it.
Get some of that custom artwork.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, a lot of these things pertain to nonfiction authors because it's easier to create premium products. But we've kind of talked about at least the concept of these kind of higher end things for fiction. But here's a question. If you're an author, you feel pretty good about your skills. You know that like you're making a couple hundred dollars a month off your fiction, and it's going to be a while until you maybe get enough books out, get enough knowledge to be making the amount of money you want to be making. I think the big question a lot of people might have is, should I teach a workshop, teach a class, do a thing to supplement the income so I can walk away from day job stuff, but take on this essentially second business in order to pay the bills? Claire, you do nonfiction stuff and fiction stuff. What do you think? Do you think more authors should try to teach or share or workshop to pay bills?
Not necessarily. If you're not good at it and you don't like it, don't do it, first of all. You know, I think you have to balance, right? You're working on different timelines. You're working on your short-term goals. You're working on your long-term goals. So you have your long-term strategy, and then you have some maybe short-term or long-term tactics to get there. And for me, I was fine with a slower build with my revenue and my sales because I was thinking more long-term. So you tend to sacrifice long-term stability when you focus on short-term gains. So, I mean, it is nice to have that side income, like from, you know, my consulting and that sort of thing. It's really nice, and it helps, you know, take some pressure off my writing, which it's not that I'm making less money with my writing. I just have less pressure, right? But I wouldn't do it if I didn't also really enjoy it and get a lot out of it creatively and energetically myself. Because, you know, teaching is a really easy thing for me to fall into. It's sort of like the thing I'm second best at. And mm-hmm. So in my mind, that's really what I should be most weary of, is the thing I'm second best at, because that's going to mm-hmm. be an easy fallback plan for me. So I think it just, you know, I don't think that necessarily everyone should do it. I think there are a lot of people who, no, don't do it. It's going to distract you. And if, you know, you want some money to, like, you want to eventually quit your job, maybe just, you know, maybe you're saying, I want to quit my job in January. So how do I get money now? Well, maybe quit your job next October instead, you know, like just push back the timeline a little bit so that it fits what you're comfortable with without you having to start other things that, Brian, you know, inevitably you start something new and the things that you have going on are going to take a hit. That's just how it is.
If you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to something else. It's true. People forget it. I mean, I remember back all the way back to when I did comedy and was on 5 different improv teams at the same time. There's just so much focus that you can have, and you don't want to split it in as many different directions as you possibly can.
At least you didn't have any lines to remember.
This is true. This is true. But I had to remember the team names. Like, what team am I on this day? But anyway, let's go into tip number 3. Indie author tools for the win. Missing your 2020 indie author conferences? Ally SelfPubCon starts on October 17th and is free. Mark the date and time. SelfPubCon runs from the 17th to the 18th of October. 10 a.m. to 10 a.m. I guess that is a 24-hour period there. hosting 24 world-class indie publishing presentations for authors, all free. SelfPubCon is unique compared to other author conferences, says L.A. Sasha Black. It's focused on exclusively helping you to find and use the best tools and tech in the market for indie authors, all vetted and approved by the Ally Watchdog. And you can register at Self-Publishing Advice for free using the link in the show notes. All right. So I really like Ally and the work they do, certainly. And I think that if you are on the lookout for the content that will get the light bulb moment to happen, I think a conference like this is a good idea. Claire, what's like a talk that you saw at a conference or like, I'm giving you a second here, a talk that you saw at a conference or online or like a webinar that definitely got you excited or got you interested in a particular aspect of writing or publishing or marketing? Like, I'm trying to think about, yeah, you go.
I have one. Okay.
Okay. Woo. I tread water long enough.
I remember this one. I really like this one. This was at the, maybe the first self-publishing, Selmore Book Show Live. Chris Fox gave his talk on like flagship series. And that was really interesting. Sort of like building that brand, that series that's going to be associated with your pen name. That was a fun one. I liked thinking about that and talking about that.
Yeah, I really liked that one as well. I definitely have enjoyed a lot of the panels that I've gone to when you do see like 3 to 5 people just all, like I remember there was one at 20 Books where folks were talking about their royalty amounts and just like it's very aspirational. I know that some people get down about that. Some people get really, really inspired. But I think maybe the one that sticks out to me the most, I did get to see a podcast movement. I got to see Kevin Smith talk. And he is just a rambly bundle of energy. And it's just like, it seems like it shouldn't work. Kind of like all of his movies. It seems like it shouldn't work. But there's like just funny in the way you need at that moment. And for me, that kind of thing is inspiring to be able to draw that much focus when you're on stage and just be totally captivating for that amount of time.
Yeah, yeah. I remember at the Austin Film Festival way back, there was a round table with comedy writers that was like, whoa, like I got to sit and talk to people who had, you know, it was like a round table, but like we'd switch every so often. So I'd be at a table with like 8 people and like a writer from The Simpsons or like someone who worked on South Park. And it was just like, oh my gosh, these guys, like I could be that. I could be one of these people. Yeah. Those sort of up close moments where you're like, oh, they're really smart, but like they're not untouchable.
Right, 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 right. Yeah, I think those small settings and like the ability to set those up by an organizer is just really cool experience to share with people so that it's not just, I'm in the back row of this 1,000-person thing. You're there. You're up there. Right. You're mixing it up with cool people. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, let's jump into the top 5. And I believe you are up first.
It's time for the Selmore Book Show Top 5 News. Number 5.
The internet exists? Barnes & Noble's Nook Library has been down since Saturday, October 10th, 3 days at the time this was written. Michael Kozlowski of Good eReader writes, quote, Barnes & Noble store managers have contacted me and stated that there is a virus in their networks. It initially came down from the corporate and filtered down to the stores and also affected the Nook. Cash registers and physical bookstores are attached to the same network, so no orders can be placed or processed. While Barnes & Noble said it would be fixed by Sunday, as of 1 a.m. October 13th, the Nook system was still down. Users have been unable to load newly purchased books or access books already in their libraries. Commenters on Good eReader report that Barnes & Noble is deleting comments on Twitter and Facebook that ask about this issue.
Good to see here.
It's in the computer.
It's in the computer. How do we get it out of the computer? It's too bad that that Barnes & Noble is having this problem. This just feels like if this happened to Amazon, it would be done in 20 minutes. And because Barnes & Noble has had trouble with computer things, this is going on for days and days.
It's really unfortunate. Like, Barnes & Noble does not need these setbacks right now. And it's just, you know, you got to sell books, man. Yeah. I actually did not know this was happening because I haven't checked my stats over on Barnes & Noble in a while. But yeah, this is crazy. Like, the entire system. I mean, maybe don't have your entire system connected quite like this.
Yes. Yes.
It's taking down the mainframe.
Something to learn here. Like, some hackers were like, man, we've been working on Amazon for months and can't get in there. It's like, hey, you guys want to try the Nook store? Like, again, fine, let's take it down. And they just have like a red button that just takes down the whole Nook store. And then it's down. And it's down. I do hope that they get it solved, and for just for the sake of everybody. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you definitely have to be prepared for attacks on the internet, because they are relentless. I feel like someone's been trying to get into our website all week. I keep seeing password reset requests, and I'm like, all right. Really? Well, oh yeah. That, huh. But we have plugins that hopefully help with these things. And
why do you want to post on Selmore Book Show?
I don't know. Hopefully they'll never guess that it's my name backwards. All right, let's move along to number four.
Number four.
Ingestion in question. There are even more changes underway for KDP, reports Roger Packer for Self-Publishing News. So be ready to check your ebook formatting, as KDP is warning authors of the new file ingestion requirements. Yes, ingestion is the weird word that Amazon chose for the process of uploading files under their new requirements, which are designed to better support enhanced typesetting and other advanced features. KDP and their new file ingestion requirements says that October 27th, they will be updating ebook file conversion requirements, including more checks to ensure ebook manuscripts are formatted correctly, allowing more books to support the typesetting. Quote, for titles already available on Kindle, no action is needed. Your ebooks will continue to be available to customers as they are today. For new or resubmitted titles, if you submit a file and it does not meet the new requirements, the actions to fix it will now be available for you on your KDP bookshelf after you upload your manuscript and cover, end quote. Want some ingestion protection? Like Tums, to peruse the possible pitfalls to prompt publishing, please visit the post on rogerpacker.com. So another day, another term we have to learn, I guess.
I refuse.
File ingestion reminds me of Smashwords and the meat grinder. What are your thoughts on this, Claire? I mean, I imagine if you're using a nice program like Vellum, it's probably going to take care of this, one would think. What are your thoughts on this ingestion?
Check your files before you upload. Because I know that I upload frequently, you know, if I find a typo or something and I have, I don't know, 5 minutes that I don't want back, I'll go in and change it and re-upload. So if you're doing that, you know, it's just a public service announcement.
Mm-hmm. Looks like there's some stuff with tables, which a lot of authors don't use, and just some backgrounds of text and whatnot.
Yeah, this would be more if you're using InDesign or, I mean, bless your heart, Word to format. Go and make sure everything's good. And if you need a talk, find some professional help.
Some Word therapy.
I've been there. I've uploaded from Word. It is. Whew.
Remember those early days, 2012, 2013, 2014, just like using Caliber. It's like the Wild West of trying to get your Word document to work. And then if you were wide, you're like, I guess I'm going to let it go through the meat grinder on Smashwords, and then I'm going to upload the EPUB that that creates to places. And it's like just the ugliest little file you've ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember releasing a book that I had to do on InDesign because I decided it would be funny to have a bunch of footnotes. Long footnotes. Never again.
If we ever did like a 10 things first time authors do that they shouldn't, footnotes would be among those 10.
It's not worth it. You know, I'm not David Foster Wallace here. Thank God, really. But, you know, it's not necessary. Put what you want in the main text and save yourself some headache. I guess if you have citations,
or have a link to a website that has your footnotes,
right? Or have put the footnotes at the end of the chapter, like all the citations, if you need that. Do something.
Just don't try to put footnotes into your InDesign document.
No.
Oh my goodness gracious! Well, thank you to Packer for sharing that, and hopefully no one runs into these ingestion problems. I hear if you just get an acid reducer, it should help. So let's go on to number three.
Number three.
Full stream ahead. Last year, digital streaming accounted for as much as 84% of Sweden's entire countable book market. And audiobook subscriptions are taking off across the rest of the Nordic countries, says Mark Williams of the New Publishing Standard. Sweden's BookBeat is on target to hit 400,000 subscribers by the end of the year, and it's just one of several streaming services in the region. BookBeat is currently in 6 markets, its 3 largest being Sweden, Finland, and Germany. In September, they launched in Denmark and Poland. Their 6th market is BookBeat UK, says Williams, quote, where the company has made little impact, mainly because UK publishers have been unwilling to take the unlimited subscription model seriously.
Sad we don't have a quote from the Swedish chef. That's my contribution here. All right, so
it's a great one.
Thank you. So we've got this growth in this particular market in these Nordic nations. I think it's really interesting. And a couple years down the line, we're going to see like different pockets, I feel like. Different pockets of like, this is going to be popular in Australia and New Zealand. And this is going to be popular in Norway. And this will be popular in the United States. And a lot of it is what became popular first in this particular place. And when something hit big, like did it hit bigger in 2011 or 2020? And that's why the diversification is really important in the long run, because I am guessing that if you're in Kindle Unlimited, you probably can't be in BookBeat, at least with your ebook, though maybe with your audiobook. And who knows if one can make money off of BookBeat, but still, a lot of different things are going to change internationally in different areas of the world over the next decade.
And I mean, it's good to know, especially if you're wide, because I don't know of a channel that's really taken off in Sweden and Finland, but they do have a substantial amount of English speakers or readers. And it mentions Germany as well, which, you know, I love the German market. So, you know, just because you're not writing in those languages, you don't want to assume that people there aren't reading them. Not
right.
It's only us that don't learn any other languages. So,
yeah, this is a great point. We're the ones who only know English. They know English too.
Yes.
No. Yeah, absolutely. And so we'll keep an eye on these sorts of things. I think that when it comes to hearing about a trend, you don't necessarily need to take action right away, but it's good to kind of file away as, like, let's say BookBeat suddenly had 4 million subscribers in 2022. Then it's like, let's get Swedish here.
Let's get Swedish. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say when I see stuff like this, I write it down on a sticky note and I will say, okay, I'm going to spend like 30 minutes looking into this later. You know, like you can lose 30 minutes on a possible dead end that might also be a really great opportunity. So I would just say like, these things are good to look into, but limit your time and really assess like, is this going to work for me? Is this where I am in my strategy right now or not?
I like your thoughts on putting it on a post-it. I have always had trouble getting derailed by when there's something right then and there I want to take a look at. Mm-hmm. So at the earliest, I will schedule work for myself the following day. Like mm-hmm. I no longer will say, oh, but I better look at that later today. It's always, let's put that in tomorrow or let's put that down the line in an event I have like at a certain time per day, every day. I just stick it into that day and I know I'm not going to forget it because I get like anxiety from the fear that I'm going to forget a thing. But if I know it's in the calendar at some point down the line.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there have been times where when I'm like in that information seeking mode or it's just I'm surrounded by a lot of new information, I will do like an eventually list.
Yeah.
You know, eventually. And I think it's a great idea for that you mentioned to, if you're really excited about it, don't just jump into it right away when you have all that mm-hmm. excitement, because it's just going to derail you. Sitting on it and seeing if you're still interested in it the next day, that's a good way to really be measured in whether or not it's worth your time.
True that. All right. We are just cruising along to number two.
Number two.
A Tale of Two Launches. There's more than one way to launch a book, says author Kirsten Oliphant, big and splashy, or chill and low-key. Quote, the idea of big launches comes from traditional publishing, Oliphant says on the Create If Writing podcast. But many indies do it, too, because it's the way it's always been done. The downside to the big launch is that it only works if you've got all your ducks in a row. Print books need to be ready and sent out. Readers primed with countdowns and cover reveals and promos and ads stacked for the big launch. Then you're online a week, sharing, emailing, and promoting. It's exhausting and it's not always worth it. The alternative is the low-key launch, which focuses on the long term. Sure, you email your list, post in your Facebook group, remind your team to review, and all the other things, but the goal is to build up your sales, hopefully becoming sticky, and holding your rank on Amazon. The launch for you depends. Big launches are best for authors who publish 1 to 4 a year, have the time and money available, want to make a giant splash or hit a bestseller list, and can handle the intensity. Low-key is better for authors on a tighter or flexible budget, a mental state that doesn't like a lot of pressure, and for those who publish more often, because frequent big launches can exhaust your audience. Quote, one big thing to remember, a book is a long-term investment, says Oliphant. Made the most money this year on a series that was written 2 years ago. The latest book is almost a year old now, but that series is bringing in the most money. It's interesting because we really do have this feeling like every launch needs to be this make or break deal, but it doesn't have to be. And it does kind of come from that traditional publishing mindset. Claire, are you more of a big all-in launcher, low-key launcher, or somewhere in between?
I'm more of a low-key launcher.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of it is that I publish too frequently. It's not like every pen name is publishing a lot, but overall I publish pretty frequently. When I was focusing on Cozy Mystery, it was all I could do just to get the next book out fast enough. And that was all I needed to do. So I think that's also an element of looking at your existing audience. Like I was at the point where I would put a book out. I wouldn't really need to publish it. I just tell my existing audience about it and it would make me enough money to have made that last month worth it. Right. So it's like,
right.
All right, that's my strategy because that is where most of my energy is. I don't have the energy for the big launches. I've tried it. I mean, I'm going to give it another shot with this new pen name just to try and get it some momentum. I think, I don't know. I don't really know what my strategy with it is yet. So that's why I'm not releasing it. But yeah, I don't love big launches. And I think there is sort of that pressure of like, yeah, let's do this big launch. And also the pressure of if your launch doesn't go well, right? Have you ever had a launch that you thought was going to go well and it just didn't? It can be discouraging.
It is discouraging. I don't like not hitting numbers. That is for sure.
But it's also not the end. That's the thing. Not by any means.
It's very much the shoot for the heavens to end up among the stars, which I believe is a Ralph Waldo Emerson misquote.
For sure.
But I'm a big launcher. Mm-hmm. I like the big launches because I like big swing and then take a rest, theoretically. I don't always do a good job at the take a rest, but I like big bash type thing. I don't like little subtle things. It's just the way I tend to operate. I like putting in a lot of resources into these and then just not doing them all the time. And I think that has fit my personality, but it's definitely not for everyone. And I will say, like, doing an all-in kind of launch is exhausting, and you're not necessarily going to do it to its utmost the first time you do it. You need to get better as you go along and create better systems. Like, you can't effectively pants a large launch. You need to plot it.
And also just understanding if you know how to do one. I mean, I think that's kind of what you're saying, but you know, if you're just getting started in this and you haven't released many books, you may want to do a big launch, but what do you do, right? Do you know that the things that you're going to do are going to be the most effective use of your time and money? And are you really just doing it because you hope that this sort of attention will bring you something, or do you have a clear goal? You know, because it's like, if you see other authors launching and they're doing really great and everyone's raving about their book and it's getting them lots of attention, that can be very tempting, but they might have a different audience than you. They may, you know, so you don't want to get into that comparisonitis and let comparisonitis drive your launch strategy either.
Yeah, it's true. I think you are probably right that more of the low key launch is better for folks who are just starting out. Keep the expectations a little bit lower because you just don't know. We get a lot of people saying, I don't know what's good, like what a good a number of sales is or what a good number of clicks or impressions should be on an ad. And so it's like, rather than saying, I want this certain number and not having any idea how you get close to it, keep the expectations low at first. Focus on things you can control. Number of people you reach out to, or number of words you write in a certain day, rather than selling a certain number of copies. Eventually, you'll know more. And then you can set achievable goals, but not at the beginning.
Absolutely. And keep in mind that first in series, if you're writing a fiction series, first in series is almost impossible to launch. Usually the book four in the series feels like the launch to me because that's where they tend to take off. So,
but Claire, that's going to take me a year to write four books.
Then you have something to look forward to in a year.
Aw, that's a really sweet way of looking at it. All right, let's go into the number one story of the week.
And now the number one top five news item.
Oh, we'll take care of your group. Have you wanted to start a Facebook group for your fans? Hesitated because of the work involved to manage it? Good news, Facebook has just launched Admin Assist, which promises to help you moderate posts by automatically taking actions based on your requirements. You can limit promotional content in your group by automatically declining posts that have certain keywords that include links or by people who are new to the group. Quote, in short, Admin Assist enables you to set controls on what content is published and who can post in your group, says Facebook in the announcement. The system even lets you give feedback to post authors to edit their posts and resubmit after Admin Assist takes action on your behalf. For step-by-step instructions on Admin Assist, check out the post in the Facebook community. Would you rely on this?
No, I wouldn't.
Even if it didn't sound so sinister.
Which is why I made that title for this one. Okay. I don't remember what Roland's was, but oh, we'll take care of your group. I don't know how I feel about this. I think that the thought is there to try to, I think a lot of admins of groups do run into the trouble of people not reading the rules and people going post crazy. You do see, even if it's very clear at one, posts in a bunch of Facebook groups doesn't really work as a promotional method. But two, for the most part, I know some people have found some moderate success with that, but for a lot of people, that is not what they want in their group. And people continue to do it, which I think is just, it kind of goes back to that social media etiquette from the earlier tip. Yes, one way to not be looked upon as well is to just go around posting links in groups. You don't really want to do that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it could be useful if you have a massive group, but I think the point of groups, especially the smaller ones, maybe anything under 100, is like interaction. Yeah. So just to be like hands off, that's not really gonna, I don't know that I necessarily trust a bot to foster, you know, community, but it could be helpful, I guess. I mean, I've never had problems in my cozy mystery group. I think there've been maybe one or two things where I'm like, no, we are not posting that. Right. But that's it. And it wouldn't be anything that I could have caught with a word, you know, like a word filter or anything like that. So, I mean, if you have a big group or you have a group that talks about things that maybe lend themselves to inappropriate discussions, then you could do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, already put filters for like slurs on all of my stuff. Like there's in no world do we ever need these words.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah,
you can go ahead and do that already. But I don't know. What do you think, Brian?
I think that if you get a group to a certain size, it does help to have a system for it. I think what Facebook is trying to do is to give you a system that I was just talking about this off the air, hitting a when you see a fly hitting it with a mallet rather than a fly swatter. Mm-hmm. You really do need to be careful about deleting posts that are on the border of promotional or not connecting with someone and saying like, oh, we did have to delete this, but here's why. And here's what you can do differently. Like there's a human contact. When I would send the wrong link, and we've all done it, sent a wrong link in an email, I used to think it was the end of the world because I was like, I screwed up and now I'm going to have to send another email. But I kind of changed my tune on it because I realized, oh, actually, this gives me an opportunity to connect with humans again and to like show that we make mistakes sometimes. But like now I have it set so that if like, for instance, Best Page Forward, it's like, if we make a mistake or if someone wants a revision on a book description that we just sent them, no questions asked. We just send them a coupon for the next one while we start working on that description. So we're still going to fix it up. Mm-hmm. And we're just like, oh, our bad. Like, here's a coupon because we understand that it's inconvenient to have to wait longer to get that description. And so like maybe you can find ways like to, when someone goes against the rules in a group, maybe you can find a way to make it more of a human connection and not have to use the Terminator to stop these posts from appearing, because it does happen. But I love teaching moments and teachable moments. There was someone who posted on an ad that I was running for the challenge, like 8,500 authors went to your last event. Psh, I don't believe that. And I was like, very happy attitude, screenshot of number of registrants from last time. And the person, like, people don't always reply to that sort of thing, but like, huh, I guess that showed me, lol, 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 was the person's response. And I thought it was like a really sweet, like, nice thing. And I responded to that. I know it did sound like a tall tale. And like, you can respond to frustration, hatred, a lack of serotonin, was it, that gets people in punishment mode? You can respond to that with humanity.
Yep.
And this goes back to like liking posts and commenting on them. You can respond to things with a human rather than a machine. And I think that it takes more time, but it leads to a lot better long-term results.
Yeah, people have stopped expecting humanity on social media. So it's always a pleasant surprise when it's like, oh, all right. Yeah, no, this is great. People expect things to, you know, bounce off their anger, to bounce off other people and reflect back at them. But if you just kind of, you know, it's like catching a baseball with soft hands, right? Soft hands on that insult. And then it can actually turn into a huge benefit for your brand.
Yeah. We'll take whatever soft hands we can with our souls. Soft hand souls at Sellmore Book Show. We need a question of the week. I'm really digging the human versus computer type response here. What angle should we hit this from, do you think? Like, what do you want to know about how authors will try to bring an extra step of humanity to their interactions with readers?
Yeah, maybe, because I know we encourage automations all the time, and I will not stop encouraging automations, but where in some of your processes could you add a little extra human touch?
Yeah, I like that. How will you make the automatic parts of your business feel more human as you are trying to improve your systems, but also foster connection?
I like it.
Cool. Me too. You started it. So you can answer the question of the week over at sellmorebookshow.com in the comment section for episode 341. This has been a birthday treat for me. So thank you, Claire, for doing the show with me today.
Thanks for sharing your birthday with me. And,
oh, of course.
And helping make everyone feel bad tomorrow when they listen to the show and realize they forgot your birthday.
Well, judging by how many comments I've gotten on Facebook today, I don't know how many people will have forgotten, but...
Oh, okay. Humble brag. Actually, not so humble brag, really.
No, it's just like I can't... There's too many to comment on.
Yeah,
it's,
you're just too
I
loved.
Feel bad. Yeah, I can't comment on all of them.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you feel bad. You're just too loved for your own good.
I'm not trying to say it like that, but thank you. I will say that don't feel bad if you missed my birthday. I will accept these kind words.
Yeah, it's not Brian. It's me. It's me who's trying to make you feel bad. Let's be clear about this.
Yes, Claire. Claire's using the hard throw on your soul. Well, Claire, I always appreciate the wisdom that you share throughout the show. And if you would rather throw to me on this wisdom, you can.
I would like a little wisdom from your many years on this earth.
Any. One of the things I've learned and I've connected with a lot of authors who are my seniors and a lot of authors who are younger than me. And I think that if we attack things with kind of that beginner mindset, like we approach things with there is always something to learn from people at every age, at every skill level, we're not above anybody. We can always be open to improving and growing, then we are a lot more likely to be ahead 1-5 years from now than we are now. And if we don't take that mindset, we will watch people of all ages who are a lot more open to that be in a place that we would have liked to have been.
That is great wisdom.
Aw, shucks. You got
you clearly are getting older and wiser.
Aged.
Aged. So old you have to pronounce it that way.
That's the way we I got a notice
that, oh, okay.
That was the way everyone my age had to pronounce it. So, well, thank you, Claire. And I have really enjoyed being in this show my many years, and I will continue to be here many years. So thank you for listening. For H. Claire Taylor, I'm Brian Cohen. Go check out the challenge, sellingforauthors.com/October. And those videos will be up through October 26th. So have a wonderful rest of your book selling week. Feel free to send me as many ponies as you see fit. And we will talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Books Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling!